This is the Apple This Extra.
Welcome to Apple This Extra 36. My name is Michael Hansen. Today I'm joined by two fellow panelists. We have Mr. Thomas Domville, also known as Anonymouse. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Michael.
And we also are joined by Alex Hall. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Michael.
Hope everybody is having a good day, and thank you so much to you, the listener, for tuning in. As always, we hope that this edition of the AppleVis Extra has an informative and engaging listening experience for you. Now, one of the things in the blind community, especially one of the things that we have seen posted a lot about on the AppleVis website over the last couple years, I would say especially, are accessible games. Unfortunately, the number of games that are accessible to blind people is lower than the number of games that are going to be accessible to sighted people. But one of the really cool things that we've seen a lot of, again, especially in the last year, last couple years, are accessible audio games. And these are not just the type of live action zombie shooting games that we've certainly seen a lot of, and people just tend to really lap up. These are games like card games, like Crazy Eights and bowling and just all kinds of really cool things. There's even a horse racing game out now. The developer behind a lot of these games is Marty Schultz of Kid Friendly Software. We first interviewed Marty on the AppleVis Extra in June of 2014, and he came and talked to us about his audio game Blindfold Racer. Since then, the Blindfold series of iOS games has become wildly popular on AppleVis. Around 25 titles at the time of this recording are available, with new titles being added all of the time. Marty also won the Developer of the Year award in the 2015 AppleVis Golden Apples, as voted on by the AppleVis community. So here to talk to us today about the Blindfold series of iOS games, Kid Friendly Software, how he got where he is today, and what we can expect going forward, I'd like to welcome Mr. Marty Schultz to the AppleVis Extra. Marty, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, and thanks for inviting me.
We are really glad to have you with us today. So last time we talked a lot with you about Blindfold Racer, and you told us how Blindfold Racer got started, and you know how, as I recall, it was like a science, technology, engineering, and mathematics STEM project for middle school students. Is that right?
Exactly. And then from there, after we built Blindfold Racer, which took us a long time, probably over a year, because it was really an exercise in STEM and really evolving and understanding the design process. I had met afterwards with several people who are notable in the blindness community, and they gave me ideas for more games. I met with Judy Dixon, who runs the Talking Book Program for the National Library of Congress. I met with Kim Charlson, her husband Brian Charlson. Kim's president of the ACB, or was at the time, and Brian works at the Carroll School for the Blind, and another guy, Doug Wakefield, who was involved in a lot of accessibility testing and issues over the past, 30 or more years. He's retired now. And from that, they gave me the ideas to do a blindfold Sudoku and a cryptogram, which I did. And then a little followed on, I met with Joanne Baker, who recommended that I build a blindfold blackjack, because she had just gotten back from a vacation or a seminar in Las Vegas. And she and a sighted colleague were playing blackjack, and she just loved it, so I built that, and that really started kicking off more and more games, because once those three games came out, I started getting suggestions from lots of people, mostly through the AppleVis community, and then extended beyond that, on other games to build, and at this point, we have between 25 and 30 games.
So, when you first developed Blindfold Racer, and then Blindfold Sudoku, and Cryptogram, and, the Blindfold Blackjack, did you ever think that it was going to lead to having, around 30 titles in the App Store? I mean, did you have any idea that it was going to become, you look at Blindfold games and they have such a following in the community. People love them, people love this stuff.
Yeah, no, I never would have guessed. I mean, I started getting a lot of requests right and left, and I realized there's a lot of demand for this stuff, and the games are fun to build, and the testers are fun to work with, and you know, I get like a thank you from somebody new almost every day, which is, you know, most of the reward I get out of this. So no, I had no idea I'd be up to that many games, and they're getting easier to spin out because I'm building a larger and larger technology infrastructure to be able to do it. So each game is kind of like a clone of another game that has everything in there, and then I just have to tailor it around the new game. And I built, people have probably seen that over the past year, the games, the infrastructure for the games, the menus and things like that are all very similar, so you don't have to go through a new learning curve every time you get a new game. It's, they're all laid out the same way, and if I want to add a feature to one game, it ends up getting into every game. The most recent one being, I'm actually start testing this out with the latest test version of Bingo, which is if you obtain some coins and you didn't get the unlimited coin package, but let's say you just got a dollar's worth of coins, and then you delete the app and reinstall it, your coins were lost, and then I have to send somebody a coupon to get their coins back. But now it'll kind of remember how many coins you had up in the cloud, so that way you don't have to, you know, everything's a lot smoother. And then another, all the games when they first start up tell you about all the other games. That's something you can turn on and turn off. And then every time a new game is announced, that pops up at the beginning, so you, people are always brought up to speed on the latest games. Then I start getting some complaints from people, which is they have too many games on their iPhone and it's taking up too much space on their screen.
What a wonderful problem to have that you've got too many accessible games. I never would have thought I would have heard that.
Right. So what I'm about to release within the next month or so, something called Blindfold Menu. And that'll simply pop up the menu of all the games out there. And then that way you can hide all the games in one of your folders and get to the games directly from the menu.
Oh.
That way it doesn't take up a lot of space. And you just, you know, shove, each time a new game comes out, you shove it into the folder. And every time you want to play a game, just go to Blindfold Menu and pick the game you want.
Wow.
How's that supposed to work? I'm curious about that. So are you saying that it's going to be a one app where you'll have a list of games and you can download it within that app itself to play?
No. It's simply using a trick on the iPhone, which is it knows all the games you have installed. So let's say you'll scroll down the list, and let's say you get to video poker or you're at, you know, horse race. You just click horse race, and then it'll start up the horse race app.
Oh, okay.
And tell us about that blindfold horse race. That I saw it and it sounds very intriguing. Tell us about that, and because I know that this is going to be really new and maybe people haven't tried it yet. How does that work, and where'd you get the inspiration for it? And
I kind of got the inspiration just thinking about what Papa Sangre did when you walk from room to room, and somebody told me I never actually downloaded the app, but they said you kind of walk your fingers on the screen. And then at some point, somebody was telling me to start doing some racing games, and they were saying to do things like baseball or basketball or you know, European football. And I thought, these should really be action games where you have a combination of both running and, you know, throwing the ball and catching and things like that. And I said, first I need to establish a way to run. And I just started, you know, moving my finger on the screens in this index pointer finger type of walking. And I said, this could make an interesting horse racing game. So I started laying it out, and I would have, it took a while to calibrate everything and get it going. But in the simplest level, you're just doing the time trial. So you actually learn how to walk your fingers, and you actually hear the horse running at the speed of your fingers. And then when you're actually in a race, you hear, if you put on headphones or even on an iPhone or an iPad, the horse in post one comes out of the left speaker, the horse in post three comes out of the right speaker, and you're kind of coming out in the middle, and you'll actually hear the horses right next to you as you're racing down the track. And then I thought this would get boring after a while, so I added a steeplechase race where you actually have to jump over fences, and then I added a figure eight race where you have to tilt the phone right and left as you're entering any of the curves on the track.
Wow.
So it's kind of fun, and what was interesting is most of the games that I send out to the testers usually takes about a month or so before it's very stable, and I get lots of suggestions and complaints and bugs, and this one had almost nobody saying anything, so I didn't know whether it was a flop or not. And so I sent an email out to the group, and I said, you know, I send every 2 weeks, so I'll send them out a status of the games. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, the game works fine. They love it. They said, send it to the App Store. I sent it to the App Store. And then everyone's writing me saying, you know, this is the best game I've created so far.
Wow.
But they haven't seen Barnyard, and I think that people are going to love that game.
Barnyard?
Yeah, Barnyard is actually...
How does that work? What is that? That's the first question. What is that?
The thing for Barnyard was actually I saw my daughter playing a game called Goat Evolution, and there's a goat evolution, a cow evolution, dog evolution. But the idea of all these games is... You drag two goats together of evolution one, it turns into like a slightly bigger goat.
Okay.
Then you drag two of the bigger goats into a even bigger, and you keep going.
Okay.
All the way up to like 2 to the 16th or something like, or 2 to the 10th. It's just a ridiculous number of levels.
Okay.
And this kept her and her friends busy for days and days before they got bored of this.
Huh.
And I thought I can build something similar, so I started playing with a game where you would. Use a pinch motion. You would first find two objects on the screen and push them together, and that would evolve into something new.
Okay.
I tested that out, and people had about half of the people had a lot of trouble both finding the two objects and then pinching them together. And part of that was just due to the complexity of it, and part of that was due to the iPhone screens get bad when you set down two fingers and then lift one finger and then replace that finger.
Okay.
Which would be normal actions you'd need to do to play the game, but at some point the phone stops responding so the app can't do the right thing. So I said, okay, if I can't do that, maybe I can do something similar, which is you drag one object and you drag it somewhere, and by dragging it somewhere, it becomes valuable. So the premise is anywhere from every 2 seconds to every 15 seconds, another animal pops up in the barnyard. You have to drag the animals from the center of the barnyard to the north, south, east, or west fence. When you have enough animals at any given fence, and you can only have one type of animal at a hitch to the fence, then you swipe towards the fence, and that puts the animals in the barn, and you get the credit for those animals. If you have one animal on the fence, you get 1 point. If you have two animals on the fence, you get 3 points. If you have three animals on the fence, you get 6 points, and on up. So you want to get as many animals to the fence as possible before you move them into the barn. But if you put the wrong animal onto that fence, then all the animals scatter away.
Oh.
So it's kind of challenging, and it's actually a lot of fun. And I actually give it a couple of sighted people and ask them to do it with their eyes closed, and they enjoyed it as well, which means it probably will be fairly popular in the blindness community, but probably won't make the transition into the sighted community. But it is a fun game to play. And, you know, I'm getting emails from some of the testers saying they made it up to like 1,700 points, and they were having the animals fired at them like once every second. So it's another very addicting game.
What about on a related thing? I, as I was thinking about questions, I never would have thought I would be asking this. But what about, Farmville, I mean, type games, like you see where, you know, it's your job to take care of a virtual farm, because one of the things that I've seen is that, you know, people have talked about some of the other audio games is that not everybody is into killing zombies and,
right.
You know, trying to fight their way, being a blind swordsman and trying to fight their way to whatever it is. So what about, have you ever thought about or received requests for...
I started getting a group of emails from people who wanted to have the game Park Boss running on the iPhone.
Okay.
And I had no idea what that was.
Yeah, so how does that work? What is it? Yeah.
I did some research on it. I found out this guy up in England, I think maybe Scotland, I don't remember, built a game where you're running your own amusement park.
Okay.
And you have to decide what to invest in. Do you invest in more rides? Do you invest in hiring staff? Do you invest in... other types of entertainment or food. So everything is an investment, and then it pays off. So you grow your amusement park bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked and I realized there's a lot of work there. He did a great job. It's a completely audio game. So I sent him an email. I said, you know, why don't you port this over to iOS? And he writes back saying he doesn't have that much spare time. They have a new kid, and there's a lot of things going on in his life.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, if you want, we can collaborate on it. I'll port the thing over. And then if it ends up making any money, we can kind of figure out how to split that. He writes back and basically says, that sounds great, and he sends me the source code. So one of my background projects will be is porting over his Park Boss project, which is similar to one of these kind of storyline games that you're talking about, where you have to you know, whether it's a farm or an amusement or a business, whatever you have to build.
Yeah.
And if that's successful, then we can see about doing some more like that.
Wow. That is the thing that I've always liked about your games. And I think I sent you a tweet maybe last month. I said, I'm not a gamer, but being able to play Wild Card was a lot of fun. It was just cool. You know, a lot of these things, you don't have to be a hardcore gamer to appreciate some of this stuff.
That's really important to me, because there are so many people in the blindness community who are visually impaired who don't play a lot of games and aren't hardcore gamers, but there's probably a game out there that they like. And when I think Bingo was just approved by the App Store, but I didn't release it yet because the testers had a couple of more suggestions.
Okay.
I implemented those suggestions. And when Bingo comes out, I think it'll be a hit as well, as, you know, word games I haven't promoted yet, but people start to hear about it. And it consists of like Hangman, Boggle, Scramble, and a word ladder. And apparently people say it's better than anyone that they've seen yet, because it has those four different games in there, and they're all kind of interesting and challenging, and again, designed for rapid audio play.
All right, Marty, I had a question. Well, a couple of questions, I guess. You said that your first ever game started out as a STEM project for, I don't know if you were teaching or if it was just a class you were working with. I think that's a really neat idea. I think it's a wonderful way to teach people about programming and STEM in general, and also to kind of introduce them to sort of the needs of the blindness gaming community, if you will. I wondered if that had continued. Are you still working with students at all on your projects, or has this sort of become more of a hobby just that you do?
It's more of a hobby just that I do. I might go back next semester or next September and start working with the school again and having kids think about it and do it. My daughter's off in high school, and the high school's very far away, so I don't think that's feasible in involving upper school kids. But the middle school kids and the grade school kids were wonderful to work for. So, you know, that's probably a great idea.
How have you found that the development process has changed? I don't know if Racer was your first ever iOS app at all, but you said that things had sort of gotten more streamlined. And looking at this from an end user perspective, I mean, we're just seeing these games come out left and right, and we think it's just incredible. You know, we have no idea how you could just be so prolific with this stuff. So how do you find the time to get so much of these games out there in such a short time?
Well, the hardest part of building any of the games is not necessarily the game rules. It's finding the code out on the web somewhere of somebody who thought about how to make a good computer player. And if I can't find the code to make a good computer player, it would just take way too long to try to design that myself for almost any game. And so there's a lot of open source of people who, over the past 30 or so years, probably since the late mid-70s, have built one game or another. And then it's just a matter of, if it's an open source, taking the logic behind the computer player and then just building a set of rules around the game itself. So, for example, right now I'm working on a variant of 1,000 Miles or Milbourne, which I'll probably rename, change some of the rules so I'm not violating any copyrights by Parker Brothers or Milton Bradley, whoever owns the game, and then, you know, just let you play, and maybe instead of be a driving game, it'll be some sort of sailing game, but have the same concepts in this card game. If I didn't find a decent rule set for how the computer would play, implementing a good strategy would be very, very difficult, and I'd probably pass on the game and find another game. In some of the movement games, like bowling, coming up with a computer player was just a matter of figuring out what the computer would have to do a good job, and then adding a little bit of probability in there and do it. As far as how I churn these out so quickly, and getting back to your infrastructure question, I have a common infrastructure among so many of the apps. It's just a matter of coming up with a rule set for the games themselves.
Yeah, that would make sense, because once you got a card game in mind, which you did, and then you rolled out a whole slew of games right after that, because it was just basically changing the rules of the card games. Though the infrastructure was there, you just changed some of the upper sections. So it's almost like flipping a house. You buy the house that was already built, but you make some changes and modernize it, and then you push it out.
But it's a little more complex than that, in that each card game is successfully more complex than the next. So, for example, some games might require both drawing a card and then either playing a card or discarding a card. Some games will have bidding relating to it. Some games will have the total at the end of the game, as opposed to some games will have a total at the end of each hand. So, for example, when I did Rummy, or Gin Rummy, that was one level more complex than Spades or Hearts. And Hearts and Spades was one level more complex than Crazy 8 and Wild Card. And 1,000 Miles is one level more complex than Spades. And, you know, if I ever do Monopoly, which has its own copyright issues, that's probably like two levels more complex than 1,000 Miles. So by doing the games as small increments over each other, it builds the infrastructure a little better.
Mm-hmm. So you have essentially, right now, we could probably safely say you got a motion kind of game that you've done with the racer, bowling, breakout, those sort of things. And then we got the card infrastructure in place. And that's, you know, it's staggering to just think here that in 18 months that you cranked out 25 plus games. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, you know, there's a bunch of games that are either almost done or in the App Store to be released. Bingo, for example, was just it was a variant in essence of some of the tile games like Color Crush and the Tile Puzzle, because it's the same concepts, but I took a little bit from the blackjack game in terms of that, you know, when you get bingo, you win more coins and some. But the layout on the screen is like going through the Color Crush screen, which is not that far from going through the Solitaire screen. And being able to go up, down, left, right.
Right. It would almost be kind of cool to see maybe more board games, you know, without going to copyists, of course, but Ladder and Chute, Sorry.
I actually looked at Ladder and Chutes, or Snakes and Ladders and things like that, which actually dates back very far. But I thought that would get real boring real quickly.
You know, Game of Life. Yeah, you know, it's hard to say because you come out with one certain card games I might not have interest in, like Crazy 8, but when you came out with Spades and Hearts, I really could dig into Spades and Hearts more. And so, you know, I guess it different perspective, and you are hitting a wide range of different things that people may have interest in, not which is fantastic. One of the questions I had before is, when we talked back in June 2014, you know, one of the things you talked about the Blindfold Racer and was that your daughter helped you out with some of these ideas and you want to contribute to the community, and you have done so much so. But one thing I've noticed is that at one time almost everything was free, and then we got to the next kind of a tier where we bought little packages that we could buy into, and then we got unlimited that, and now you've gotten into more of a coin structure. You know, I'm just curious how why that kind of a process and how things change from your initial thoughts with Blindfold Racer to today's coin system.
The reason was I started the first round was going through starter packs or some sort of upgrade pack, and then I realized a lot of the games you couldn't really do that for, and then people would ask me to enhance the game. But, you know, even though these games don't make a lot of money, the justification to going back to enhancing the game wasn't there if I'm constantly putting more things in for free and I can't move on to new games. You know, in general, I will always make sure there are no outstanding bugs in the games, but adding more features without throwing in an upgrade pack of one sort or another wasn't economically viable. So I said, well, what makes sense is for people to pay based on how much they use. If they're getting a lot of entertainment out of the game, then there should be some sort of pay per use after they have enough to understand how much they want. So I've tried to stay with that model, so that way, if you just play it a little, you know, either by watching, either by listening to the videos or the advertising videos, or just buying a dollar or two here and there, you get everything. You get as much gameplay as you want. But if you're addicted to the game, and you know you're going to play this thing for a couple of months, then getting the unlimited seems to be justified. The other thing it enables me to do is add more features to the games to encourage you to play more, which encourage you to buy more coins. So that kind of solves that whole economic cycle. That makes sense?
Yes, it does. And I just want to make sure that, you know, it's not just for me, but for our listeners as well, why that structure has gone that way. And, you know,
now, what I'd like to do, and this is kind of a longer-term goal, is get to the point where I have enough fans out there that I can switch over to a monthly enrollment subscription that you get unlimited access to everything for some fixed amount of money every month. That was actually an early goal, but I know it's going to take a long time to get there. But I think that would make it a lot less expensive for everybody. But, you know, I need to have lots and lots of games before people say, yes, it's worth spending $5 or $10 every single month to have unlimited access. But, you know, eventually I'll get there.
Well, you must have some success, successfulness in this whole 18 months, because you produced so many and so much, and you just rattled off, gosh, 3-4, maybe not 5 new games coming up already that we haven't seen. Where do you find the motivation to do these things? I mean, it sounds like you're really having a great time and having a...
Yeah, it's fun to build them. And, you know, every time somebody sends me, you know, someone who I've never dealt with before, and they send something saying, you know, this game changed their life because they can now appreciate, you know, why sighted people spend so much time on it, or they used to play this game before they lost their vision and now they can relive that experience again. You know, it's enough motivation to go on for another month. So you get one of those a day or one every few days. It feels good.
Which makes me wonder, Marty, this is Alex again. So you're sighted, right?
Yes.
And why did you go with blind-oriented games? I mean, why not just simple games that sighted people can play? You know, where'd the blindness focus, the accessibility focus come from then?
That it kind of stumbled into it, because when I worked with the kids when we were building Blindfold Racer, I didn't want to do a clone of every other game that's out there. And I also didn't want to have to hire a graphic artist, because I can't draw for anything. So I thought, this is the easiest way. I can, you know, it's easy to find good audio clips on the web, either free or not free. I now have some of the testers recording things for me. Or, you know, getting other loops. I was just emailing one of the testers, and he's going to do some trumpet recording, and we'll start using some of his trumpet recording for some of the fanfares or some of the lose sounds and give people variety. It's interesting. One of the things I did in Bingo, which I want to push further on with some other games, is in Bingo, you can record yourself saying Bingo, and you can share your recording with other people. And then other people, when they get the thing, they can decide what bingos they want to hear and what they don't want to hear. So the concept of a community contributing audio clips for different things is something I want to start exploiting in the games as well.
That's a good idea.
I had two more questions kind of before we bring things to a close here. First of all, do you have any plans to support Braille displays? Because that was one of the things that I've heard from some people who are either deafblind or who just prefer to use Braille, have said that they would really love to be able to play your games, but that they can't because of there's no Braille support. You know, would that be possible for, say, some of the card games where you don't necessarily need to hear the audio for output?
I took a first step in that direction, which is when I did the Common Voice package. Personally, when iOS 9 came out, they totally blew up our voice because they changed around the voices and things like that. So the first thing I thought is, and I heard some of the testers said, do the voice thing, give people choice, and then charge for it. So I did out like 3 games and had like this voice upgrade package for like a dollar or two. And then I got so much negative feedback on charging for that, I withdrew the price, gave it out for free, and made sure in the voice package you could set what voice you want for what is normally the female voice and what voice you want for the male voice, and change the speed and the pitch. Then I heard from the first deafblind person, and he said, can you support voiceover? Because if you do voiceover, then it should work with the Braille display. So that actually is an option that's in the product now. And some people say it works, and some people say don't work. I don't have a Braille display, so I can't really debug things. But it's a goal in the future. And the other thing I'd like to do is using a Braille display, I'd like to tie more of the game body itself into the Braille display, which I'll need a Braille display to actually pull this off. But I imagine if you're playing like a tile puzzle or Color Crush or Sudoku, it would be nice if you could actually see the entire line or column of what you're working on in the Braille display, as opposed to simply hearing or listening, you know, reading the Braille of one cell at a time.
Interesting. But, yeah. So then I know I said I only had two more questions, but follow-up questions don't count. What about if people wanted to, somebody had a Braille display and they wanted to work with you and help you on this, where could they get in touch with you? How could they help you with that?
Easiest is to email me at marty@blindfoldgames.org. That's an easy email address to remember.
marty@blindfoldgames.org. And what's your Twitter name, by the way?
Blindfold Games.
I'd like to follow up that question, too, with a turn-by-turn strategy. I've always loved this game, and I've always had a dream of being able to play turn by turn with another person, especially if I'm playing Spades, for example. I can play with the computers, which is fun, but I think what really would ratchet up and get more excitement and value out of it is to actually play with people that would turn by turn as we're playing a spade game. Have you ever considered turn by turns with these different type of games?
I did basically two player Crazy 8 first time around about a year ago, using their client server technology on the iPhone. It worked, but it was not very reliable, and it was really hard to program. And I did the same thing in Wildcard, and both were probably took more time to get the two player to work than the game itself. Then I kind of changed it around a lot and used Game Center. And that's when I had this long, ongoing battle with Apple over using Game Center as a turn-taking, and I wanted to charge for the Game Center feature because I put time into it. I said, you know, it was like a dollar or two I charged, but Apple would not let me charge for anything that they consider is built into the iPhone itself. So we went back and forth for a while over that, and I finally gave up. And then I tried a third version of doing Crazy 8 with friends. It actually came out as a separate app. That way I solved the problem with Apple. And I've been now testing it. The first version 3 came out about a month ago, and it was a flop. I did almost like a version 4. It's in testing right now, and it seems to be almost perfect. Once I get a couple of the testers to sign off on that, they're basically testing the two-player version, I'll move that over to Wildcard, make sure it's nice and consistent, and then I can go back through a lot of the games based on the demand of the game and add them. And I can do both the turn-taking games like Spades and Hearts and like, as well as some of the competing games such as Bowling or Skee Ball. For the dynamic games like air hockey, where you're actually playing a fast game against somebody else, it might take another level of complexity to get there, because instead of simply sending things back and forth and you can wait 5 seconds for that player to make a move, you need constant communication, and I have to really understand whether the things are fast enough to handle, you know, two people playing air hockey, you know, over the internet, and will it respond accurately.
Now, you're talking about, when I say turn by turn, it almost sounds like you're talking about real time. So if you want to play with a game with somebody else, it's real time. So you have to be online to play them. Is that right or wrong? Or is this a...
Well,
turn by turn, I was thinking
you would like. I take it you would like turn to, spades almost the way somebody might play chess, which is, you know, you play maybe now and then the other person plays in 15 minutes and then you play later on the same day.
Exactly.
That was the really the version 3 that I put out there for Spade for Crazy 8, and the performance when you actually are playing next, you know, when you're playing a live round, because of some problem that I could not identify, it ended up being that sometimes you would make a move, and even though the other player was waiting, ready to make their move, they wouldn't get the information delivered to them for about 7 minutes, which when you're kind of expecting it to go fast, it didn't go fast.
Right.
So I took a different approach that kind of lets me do something that gives me the flexibility to go there, but the next round of games that come out will be live play, but with an infrastructure that I could then move to delayed play.
Okay.
So, Marty, then, I have a feeling a lot of our listeners are going to be wondering about this. You've got to be our most prolific audio game producer currently, by a huge margin. I don't know if you heard, but Something Else, which is the company that produces the Papa Sangre series of games, they're planning to go out of business, but when they do, they're going to open source their entire audio game engine. Do you have any plans possibly of looking into that and maybe starting on more games that are kind of more open world, you know, like not clones of Papa Sangre, obviously, but sort of the idea of having a game map that the character can walk around and interact with things all through audio, as opposed to the genres that you've stuck with for now. Are you thinking at all about taking a look at the Papa Sangre engine at some point?
Well, I did actually license for close to $1,000 the Papa Sangre audio engine about a year and a half ago because I thought I would use that in some of the games. They didn't want to sell it to me, and then I said, you know, look, you know, you don't have to support, just let me use it. And I started using it in one or two of the games. I think I used it in Hopper, but there were a bunch of bugs in there, and you know, the audio would just disappear. And one of the reasons why Papa Sang the Something Else dropped out is it was not cost effective for them to keep their audio engine up to speed every time Apple came out with a new version of their iOS. Now their game itself, as a kind of a map playing investigation game, is something, you know, worth looking at, and maybe it's easy to kind of build things out there and come up with a way that people could collaborate on the rooms and explorations and stuff like that, and that might be fun. I'm still concerned about the audio engine and the problems that I found, and you know, taking on the engineering burden of trying to figure out where their problems are in the audio engine itself is probably a level of complexity more than I'd want to bite off.
Sure.
If there was another audio engine out there that gave a 3D experience, of which I imagine sooner or later Apple will provide, it might be worth investigating that as well.
That is really, really interesting about some of your findings with the Something Else. And I think a lot of us didn't know about that. Thank you so much for educating with us on that, and I've learned a lot. I think this, my one last thing I want to throw in there is that your blindfold menu, I don't know why, but that is awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. I've always thought how you could incorporate all these things maybe into one app instead of so many apps. But that is going to be an awesome solution. I can't wait for that. You said that's coming out real soon.
Yeah, I had to make sure that all the apps would respond as a way to be called to be invoked and started. So every app more or less has gone through that process since I started this back in October with the idea. So at this point, I could probably release it. Just have to test it out and release it.
Cool.
Well, Marty, first of all, before we get on to my last question here, I want to say thank you so much for joining us here on the AppleVis Extra. We really appreciate it, and you know, really appreciate you taking the time to join us here. The date of recording is a Saturday evening, so I want to say thank you very much for taking time out of your weekend to come and record with us. But the main, probably the last question, and probably the thing that people are probably really going to be wondering about is what's coming next. What can people look forward to, say, in the next 3 to 6 months?
Well, short term, we got a Blindfold Barnyard and Blindfold Bingo ready to come out. Word games just came out. I'm working on a version of, as I mentioned, I'm working on a version of 1,000 Miles that should be coming out soon. And we have about another 25 or so levels to add back to Blindfold Racer. I'd like to do a pinball game, a bunch more card games, and some sort of sports game similar to a soccer or football or baseball, something like that. And then I'm just looking for suggestions from people. I tend to alternate between a casino game, some sort of movement game, some sort of puzzle or logic game, and a card game, and kind of keep that order coming out so I make everyone happy.
And so how can people give you suggestions? I know we talked about this earlier, but how can people give you suggestions or feedback?
Easiest way is to send an email to me, Marty, at blindfoldgames.org.
All right. Well, Marty, first of all, again, want to thank you so much for joining us on the Applevis Extra. You know, I know that your games have been hugely popular amongst the Applevis community, and we really are looking forward to seeing what you come up with and are going to be really looking very excitedly toward the future. My name is Michael Hansen. This has been another episode of the Applevis Extra. As always, feel free to visit us online at www.applevis.com. Until next time.
This podcast has been brought to you by the community of Applevis. For the latest in resources and tips and tricks to help you get the best experience from your Apple device, visit us online at www.applevis.com.